Hey everyone, it's Casey Kasem here, bringing you a brand new episode of Get Real. It's the podcast where I take a look behind the scenes of the fantasy football industry by talking to your favorite writers, podcasters, YouTubers, radio hosts, television personalities, and many more. On this episode, I talked with the Game Day NFL's Nate Hamilton about how he came up in the industry and about his life in general. You can find Nate on Twitter at DominateFF. Nate and I had a great conversation talking about how he got started in the industry, the grind to work full-time, solo podcasting versus having a co-host, the rapper NF, being a dad, and a ton more. This is definitely one that you're going to want to listen to. You can find me on Twitter at TheCaseyKasem. You can also find the podcast over on Twitter at GetReal_pod. My writing can be found with the Fantasy Footballers at TheFantasyFootballers.com. This podcast is a proud member of the DAP Network. Go check out all of those podcasts when you have a chance. I would appreciate it so much if you could give this podcast a rating and a review. It'll only take a few seconds of your time, but it really means a lot to spreading the word on the podcast. Also, if you're enjoying this podcast, if you could donate a buck or two a month to help the podcast continue to grow, you can find the Get Real Patreon at patreon.com/CaseyKasem. That's KaseyKasem. Thanks again. Now, here's my chat with Nate Hamilton.
Hello.
What's up, Casey? How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Good. How's my microphone? Everything good?
Sounds great. How do I sound?
Perfect.
All right. Awesome. Well, I'm glad you could come and, you know, hang out for a little bit.
Yeah, me too.
So
what's that behind you?
What's that behind me? Draft boards.
Oh my goodness.
A bunch of draft boards back there. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And I can see what you have behind you. Go ahead. Since this is a audio podcast, why don't you describe to the listeners what's behind you? What's going on in your background?
I've got, man, outdated things. I have a signed Todd Gurley jersey from the Rams, a signed Todd Gurley picture from the Rams. DeAndre Hopkins signed jersey, bunch of signed memorabilia, basically Funko Pops and, the fantasy football black books that I've been in, which is three so far and working on the fourth one right now.
Awesome. So is that all you've been up to lately? What else you got going on?
Oh my goodness.
No. I know you've got a lot going on.
Too much, man. I put way too much on my plate. So I'm working on the black book. Obviously I'm writing articles and producing content over at thegameday.com. And I'm, you know, working a full-time job and taking care of my family. And you know, I have no free time whatsoever.
No free time for real. So I want to know exactly how. Well, before we talk about how you got started playing fantasy football, When you were growing up, did you play sports growing up?
Yes. I played like peewee football, like Papa Warner football. And I played baseball up until I was about 15, 16 years old. So growing up, like baseball was my sport. Like baseball was everything to me. You know, I'm from New England, so I'm a huge Red Sox fan. And, you know, went through many years of disappointment and, you know, been spoiled as of late. But, yeah, I mean, as soon as I started, you know, I don't want to jump ahead too much, but, you know, I don't let, long story short, because we'll get there. I don't watch baseball at all anymore.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad, you know, when I look back on and think about it, but I don't have the time for it.
I feel you on that. I was a big Rangers fan for a while, and it's just hard to keep track of that with football and everything else. So is fantasy football the only fantasy sport you've ever played, or have you played fantasy baseball or something else?
Yeah, I tried fantasy baseball one season. That was enough for me. I'm done with that. Like, it's so crazy. It's one of those misnomers with a lot of people when they say that, you know, fantasy football, you can just check once a week and that, you know, that's it. And then, you know, you're good to go. And yeah, baseball is literally every day, and every day has implications on your actual record and all that good stuff. So it's a lot of work. But if you're paying attention to fantasy football, you got to be paying attention to daily drops. Like people are dropping off, you know, that they are dropping onto the waiver wire and all that stuff, and paying attention to those things and making trades and all the good stuff. So yeah, I mean, fantasy football keeps me plenty busy. That's for sure.
So when did you start playing fantasy football?
I want to say, man, I was 16 and I was finally invited after a year or so. I was invited into my wife's family's fantasy league. And after my first year of playing, everyone saw how into it I was and they asked me to be the commissioner. So that happened pretty quickly. And then, you know, I'm a competitive person by nature. So I was just super into winning, you know, it's cut it short. And, you know, I was just so much into it. I started reading up on other fantasy analysts and the opinions they had for a couple of years. Then I started realizing like I relied too much on that. And I had my own opinions that I didn't listen to. And I was like, you know what? I need to start like producing my own content and writing my own content. So I started doing that, like writing for various sites. And then I, you know, eventually I was like, I need a platform to put this on. I don't know how I'm getting this out there. So I started a Twitter account in August of 2013. And funny story, I don't think I've ever shared this. So my initial Twitter handle was not DominateFF. My initial Twitter handle was Fanatsy Football. And I just typed it in quickly. And I'm like, how is fantasy football not taken? At fantasy football, that's me. It honestly, it took me a couple of days to realize that it said Fanatsy Football. So it was like typo. Man. So I'm like thinking I'm this genius, like, wow, I'm the first one to say at fantasy football. And yeah, that was not the case. So I lived with that for, I don't know, a year and a half or so before I turned it into Dominate FF. So that's a little thing that not too many people know happened.
That's awesome. That's a funny story. Yeah. Like when I first joined Twitter, I was Casey Kasem, and then I quickly deleted my Twitter, and then when I wanted it back, they said I couldn't have it. So then I put the T in front of it, and now I'm not changing it. So hey, there you go.
Hey, you are the Casey Kasem.
Yeah, I'm the Casey Kasem. So there's so why did you come up with Dominate FF?
Well, I mean, if you know, pay attention to all the other, you know, the fantasy outlets, everybody says dominate your fantasy season, dominate this, dominate that. And I'm like, my name's in that word. So I'm going to capitalize on that. And I just decided to go with Dominate FF, and I capitalized the D, the N, and the two Fs. And yeah, it's worked out.
So you said that you started out, you were writing for various sites. Why did you decide that, you know, you wanted to dive into actually doing that as opposed to having all that content to yourself?
I gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. That is tricky because obviously when I first started, I didn't think I was going to turn it into like actually doing this at a, you know, part-time. And obviously I'm really been pushing for a long time to get into the industry full-time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I put a lot of work in, and a lot of times people think that I'm already in full-time because of how much content I put out, but that's not the case. But that is a good question, because that is, at first when I started producing articles for sites, I would want to show it to everybody, obviously, like my friends and family. And I started noticing, oh man, now everyone in my league knows exactly how I feel about each player, and they know to reach for somebody to get them before me. And I was like, man, this is such a disadvantage to have your content out there. But you know, what ended up happening, which is, I can't explain it, but I started caring more about helping other people and getting, making sure that they're winning off of, you know, the advice I've given. And even in my own leagues, if someone's like, hey, I reached for so-and-so because I read your article about him, I was really impressed, and I know I sniped him from you. And it, you know, if it works out for that guy at the end of the season, I'm like, hey, I'm thanks for reading my content. Thank you for trusting my opinion. And I'm glad it worked out for you. So I think that's when I started really turning the page of it being a quote, quote, hobby for me to something I just have a passion for and want to do.
So not in a million years would anybody ever think that this would be something that would be possible to do when we were growing up, you know? So when you were growing up, what did you want to do with your life? What were your goals, you know, as a kid? What'd you want to be?
So I had many different things, right? So starting at one of my youngest memories of what I wanted to do growing up is I wanted to be a garbage man. And here's why. Okay. So it's silly. When you're a kid, you come up with the silliest reasons. So at the time, the garbage man that was picking up the garbage and the trash from on my street, he collected action figures. And he put the action figures, you know, on the back of his truck. I'm like, oh man, that's so cool. And I'm like, if you know, when I'm a garbage man, I'm gonna do the same thing. So that was like the biggest thing that I wanted to do for a long time. But as I got older in high school and everything, I was very much into architecture. And I took a few architecture classes because I loved drawing at the time. And, you know, I still do. But I'm also really good at math. So I think those two things worked hand in hand. But then as I got older, you know, I realized they don't do too much hand drawing anymore. It's all computer stuff. And so I kind of got away from that. And I've been doing a lot of data driven positions since.
Yeah. So that's what I was going to circle back to, was you talking about how you're good at math. Do you think that that seems to be a theme with a lot of the people that I talk to on this show? Do you think that being good at math has helped you in your fantasy football world?
Yeah, I mean, I think anybody can use a calculator, right? If you're talking about stats and stuff, I think it's more the fascination with numbers and, mm-hmm. and looking at anomalies and searching for those types of things. You know, when I look at stats from a whole bunch of people, you know, or a bunch of players, one thing I like to do is look for outliers, immediate outliers, and then I start investigating, okay, why did this person have it so different than anybody else? And you know, I think that's really what it comes down to. I'm not sure if you have to be really good at math, but having, you know, some kind of need or want to kind of filter through those things, I think are helpful in what we do.
Yeah, I'm not that great at math, but you know, you kind of find your strong suit, and I don't know if I found mine yet, but I want to talk to you about when you first started writing. How did you find the sites that you wanted to write for, and how did all that come about?
Yeah, so it's funny because I wrote for so many, and I hate to say no name sites, but I guess I can say that because a lot of those sites don't exist anymore. So it's okay for me to say that. But really, this was like before I even started my Twitter account. So what I did was, you know, scroll to the bottom of the page. It says, contact us if you're interested, or just even if it didn't have that, if there was a contact thing, I just went and said, hey, you know, here's a sample of some, you know, a article I wrote about somebody. And, you know, that's how I started with writing from multiple different sites. And then eventually I started writing for like Fantasy Pros, the Fantasy Footballers. You know, I reached out to Jason. He was like, you know, it was this article I wrote on Tyler Lockett and why I didn't like him at the time, actually. And he said, for someone to have me start thinking the opposite way of how I felt about a player, he's like, that impressed me. So he brought me on, and I wrote for them for 3 years. And, you know, I've kind of had my hand in a lot of different areas. And usually, so now, because I've been at it for 8 years now, the biggest thing I try to do is stay with one company. So that way I can give all my energy to that one company, and all my content makes it easier for everyone to find my content and everything. So, so I've stopped writing for so many different, you know, companies.
And kind of how you were writing for various companies. Do you think it's important to have that body of work when you're going to these bigger sites, or do you think that, you know, you can get by without having, you know, a decent body of work?
I think it speaks to the quality of what it, whatever it is you're producing. Like, you know, I mean, if you're just putting your stuff out there for, you know, on so many different sites, and it's, you know, you're just churning out content and you're not putting the time and effort in each thing, then I think people are going to, especially the bigger sites, they're going to see through that right away. And a lot of the times too, like if I'm hiring somebody, I'm not going to want to, you know, hey, you know, here, why don't you show me where I can find your work? And then I don't want to see 20 different links. Like, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to go through all that. So I think it's best to start out that way. So that way you do have a bigger reach, but then once you've been interacting with enough people, you know, on social media and stuff, and you've got a good following, I think it's best to kind of just hone it in to, you know, one to three different places, I think, my opinion.
Yeah. And do you think people can get burned out if they're doing that kind of thing too, where they're everywhere?
Oh yeah. I think I've experienced it myself. I still experience burnout. I don't think that you can avoid that if you want to produce content as often as you possibly can, whether it's for one site or 20 sites. I think you're going to experience that, because it's quite the, I know we all use the word grind, but it is, it's the, that's exactly what it is. And I think it's tough to avoid that, because especially if you're on Twitter, because Twitter is kind of like, you know, if you're not present there fairly often, you know, then not that people are going to forget you, but you're easily put off to the side, you know, until you start producing again.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, and speaking of Twitter, why do you think that Twitter is the social media platform that it's got this huge following for fantasy football players and writers alike?
I've always wondered that too. And I'm like, I'm so glad that I started a Twitter account when I did, because at the time there really wasn't, I mean, today it's just so oversaturated. It's insane. And I think it's just the easiest way to put information out there, and you know, if it's something, it's a quick thought, you put it out there, and it's, you know, obviously whoever follows you, it puts on their Twitter feed and everything. But I think the main reason is that the industry is such a reactionary industry. It's one of those things where we're constantly reacting. You know, the schedules are out tonight.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to be the first to say something about whatever, this and that, and get on top of it. So I think that's why Twitter works so well, because it's like you're interacting live with everybody, without having to set up a camera and do all that good stuff that you do when you do live streams. So I think that's why Twitter works, because it's like a live chat.
And how did you find out about the fantasy football aspect of Twitter? I know you said you created it relatively early.
Yes.
How did you stumble across the whole fantasy football game, you know, Twitter following?
So one of the sites I was writing for, the owner of that site had a Twitter account, and he suggested that I get one, because he's like, you know, this is how I get my content out there. And, you know, I was like, hashtags and all, I don't know, what was all this stuff? I, you know, it was foreign to me. And that was one of the reasons why I didn't start one until I did in 2013, because I was just like, I don't know if I want to bother with this. But, you know, like I said, when I started producing content, I'm like, no, I need to like get this out there. And I know when you don't have a following at first, everybody starts with zero followers, right? Mm-hmm. So what I did was everything I tweeted out, I did hashtag fantasy football. Like, on literally every single tweet was hashtag fantasy football. I think for the first 2 years, I never tweeted anything without putting hashtag fantasy football in it. Because I knew, like, if people are searching that, there's a chance my tweet will pop up, you know, in that search. Mm-hmm. So, and I think, you know, then once you start getting a decent following, you can kind of relax on those things and not make your tweets feel so spamish. So yeah. I think, you know, that's, you know, what I did to get started anyway.
Yeah, I think I throw out a hashtag fantasy football every now and then on something I think might appeal to more people, trying to, you know, bring in some more people. Yeah. But I mean,
I still do it for sure. Yeah. It's just that I'm not like every single tweet. I don't do it that way anymore.
And you grew basically your following is kind of an organic. I mean, a lot of people, I wouldn't say a lot of people, but you see all the time that people are trying to figure out how to get more followers because more followers equals more people on looking at their stuff, so on and so forth. But you did it all organically, and you just gave us one way of how you went around doing that.
Yep.
How else do you think to bring in an audience besides just doing a hashtag like that? What are some other ways, putting out good content, obviously, but what are some ways to kind of catch people's eye?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I was actually going to bring up this other way, which is, you know, one thing that I did. And to me, you know, I didn't even know that like buying followers was an option until somebody was like, hey, man, I just bought like so and so. I was like, no, I'm not doing that because I want people to click the follow button. And that way they're a loyal follower and that it's because they're interested in what I have to say. And I'd rather have a more interactive account than one that appears to be, you know, so I've seen Twitter accounts where it's like, you know, they've got 40,000 followers, but if you look at their feed, it's like one, like, you know, yeah, one comment. I'm like, there's just, and that happens a lot with companies. But one good thing you can do to build a following, and it doesn't matter what your number's at, this is a good thing to do anyways. You go into and do a search for, say, a certain player that you have a strong opinion on or hashtag fantasy football. And, you know, you start scrolling through and answering people's questions for them. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, even if it's not aimed at you, if it's like, hey, at Matthew Berry, help me out here. You know, Matthew Berry has a million followers. He's not going to get it to everybody. So that's when I started kind of going in. I was like, you know, hey, here's my opinion on this player. And a lot of the times they'd be like, wow, thanks. You know, thanks a lot for getting to me. I know it's kind of crazy out there. And then I would get the follow right away. So, you know, it's really, the key is just being interactive. And you know, again, I'm by nature, I'm someone who likes to help people. So like, that's where I just started. I'm like, man, every Sunday morning before the games start, I'm just going to jump in there and just start answering questions, you know, whether it's aimed at me or not. And that's what I did.
That's awesome. Have you ever had anything that you were as passionate about as you are, you know, helping people and giving advice and the whole fantasy football
deal? Yeah. I would say from a professional standpoint, that's probably my biggest passion. I mean, that's why I'm pursuing as much as I have, and that's why I pour so much into it. Even when, you know, I haven't gotten the full-time gig yet, but it's like, it's one of those things where I've been at the cusp for quite a bit now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I stop now, I'm just doing myself a disservice and I'll regret it. So, that is my biggest professional passion is fantasy football and, you know, writing articles. It's just such a big part of me. That's what got me started was writing. And, you know, podcasting, doing live streams, talking to people, talking with other people who have the similar interests, like you and I, you know, I mean, we've mm-hmm. talked plenty of times. We've talked at one of the in Dallas mm-hmm. at one of the fantasy football shows. And, you know, we're both Cowboys fans.
Yep.
So there's all that. But outside of that, I think obviously my biggest passion, I talk about it a lot, is my family. So my son, Leo, he's just turned 6, and my wife, Gina, you know, they're such a big part of my life. And it's one of those things there, you know, nothing else matters. So they are number one. And then fantasy football is a close second.
Yeah. Well, how is your wife's? How does your wife feel about your dream of being full-time fantasy? How is that whole family dynamic?
Yeah, that's a good question, because at first, like for a long time, you know, she's like, oh, that's, you know, it's a nice hobby for you to have or whatever. And there are times throughout the years that, she might get frustrated with me. Like, hey, can you put your phone down for like 5 minutes so we can maybe watch a show, or, you know, we're out on a date kind of thing. And I'm checking Twitter, like, you know how it, how it is when you have Twitter. But so there are times where, you know, she was like that. But then as I was approaching, 10,000 followers, I think that's when something went off in her head, like, wow, like you have almost 10,000 people who followed you because of the content you're putting out. This is a serious thing. And then obviously when I started getting paid to do certain things as well, she's like, okay, all right. So it's like she accepted it. And she actually, fun story, fun fact, she became my 10,000 follower.
Oh, wow.
So she was, she hasn't tweeted, I don't think at all.
Yeah.
But her Twitter account is, I think at Mrs. Dominate FF. So MRS Dominate FF. And, she was my 10,000 follower.
That's a cool, yeah, that's a cool story. My wife has a Twitter account. She never tweets from it either, but she said she just got it so she could spy on me. I'm like, you can spy on me without having a Twitter account.
But yeah, hey. I know Gina's not spying on me because she doesn't open the app. She doesn't care.
Yeah. It's crazy to think there are people that don't use Twitter.
Oh my God. I don't know what I would do without it.
Yeah. I mean, for real, it's like the biggest communication tool. Oh. And networking is real important in the fantasy football world as well. So why do you think it's important to kind of reach out and interact with people on Twitter?
Well, I think that's, you know, the opportunities I always bring up. I'm not full-time in the industry, but I mean, the truth is when you stand back and look at how many people are actually doing it, and no matter how long they've done it, and it would surprise you with some of the people that I do the same thing. I said it earlier that people assume I'm guilty of it as well. There are some people I've talked to offline, where I assumed they were full-time. They're like, no, man, you know, not yet, you know, for whatever reason.
Right.
And, so it is very important for you to do that because there's so few opportunities that when announcements are made on Twitter that somebody's gone full-time, everyone knows about it. You know what I mean? So it's like, wow, good for you. You know, congratulations. Cause it's kind of, you know, it's a dream job, you know, and it's one of those things that if you don't interact with the people in those positions to hire, how are they going to know you exist? And, you know, they may not, even if they're impressed with your resume and what you submit and your work to them, that's the first exposure they have of you. They don't know you on a personal level to a certain extent. They haven't read your stuff before, and they don't get a good feel for your personality and all those good things. So it's really important for you to put yourself out there, get on all the podcasts you can, all the live streams, you know, join a few industry leagues if you're invited into those things. Yeah. I mean, I would say, you know, interacting with all the important accounts is something that's very important.
And you were talking about podcasting. What made you decide that podcasting was something you wanted to dip your toes in?
Whew, I didn't, I swear. So that was something that, this is one of my few regrets when it comes to what I've done in fantasy football, is I wish I had done it sooner. I was, the truth is I was afraid. Like I was afraid. I don't like my voice. I don't like the way my voice sounds when I listen back to it. So it was one of those things where I was afraid to just start. It's a vulnerable thing. What all of us do, right? It's so vulnerable, whether you're tweeting it out there, what we're doing right now, talking about, and, you know, luckily right now, which we're just having a great conversation, but you know, it is a vulnerable thing to put your takes out there and your analysis and your process, because you know not everyone's going to receive it well, not everyone's going to agree with you, people are going to be very argumentative, and you know it's harsh out there, it's a harsh world, they're not going to be kind about it. So I didn't want to do podcasting at first, and that was one of my only regrets in the fantasy industry, is that it took me a long time to finally gain the courage to be a guest on a podcast. It was something that people had asked me to do. People had asked me to actually be, you know, a co-host on the podcast. And I was just so afraid of everyone having an opinion and, you know, looking at how vulnerable, you know, everything that we do is such a vulnerable position, whether you tweet it out, write articles, you know, do live streams, whatever, you know, people aren't always kind about it either. If you say something that, you know, people don't agree with, you're going to hear about it. And so I think the fear factor is what held me back for so long. But as soon as I decided to get on a podcast, it happened to be the Fantasy Tilt podcast. It was Keaton Denley and a couple other guys that were on it at the time. And then I started becoming like a frequent guest on that show until it ended up being like the Keaton and Nate show, where, you know, it was the Fantasy Tilt podcast. And we did that for 2-3 seasons, I think. And I mean, that was Keaton still to this day, one of my best friends. We talk every day. And it's one of those things where his professional life got in the way of kind of, you know, continuing on with this. And it was a sad day for us to stop the podcast, but really, you know, it brought on some other opportunities for me to jump on other podcasts and do things like that. So I guess if I were to have any advice in that department is don't wait, just do it. I mean, honestly, at the end of the day, so what, even if you did sound foolish one time, if you're good at criticizing yourself, you'll look back at it and say, all right, so here's what I can do better. And then gain courage to do it again and get better at it. And just like anything else in life, the more you practice at something, it the easier it is. It's like a second nature. And, you know, that's why I like when I do live streams and things like that, it doesn't even faze me just because, it, you know, it's something I'm comfortable doing. I love talking football and I do it with friends and, you know, I consider everybody that has me on a friend of mine. So, you know, it makes things easy for sure. But the scariest thing is just doing it. But I suggest doing it. Otherwise, you'll regret it for a long time like I did.
Yeah, it is nerve-wracking at first. I still get a little panicky at first, but once you get started, it's smooth sailing. You just gotta roll with it. So when you podcast and you do a podcast, well, when you do a podcast alone as just a solo person hosting versus having a co-host, which one are you more in favor of?
I personally. Yeah, I love talking with other people. I hate I've done my solo podcast and I'm not sure if I'm going to bring it back this year or not. Just because there's no room for error when it's just you recording, you know, you've got to eliminate a lot of the ahs and I'm mid thought. Let me think about something. Cause you don't have somebody else kind of chiming in or asking you a question to prompt something. You know, it makes, you know, you prep for those things and it makes writing articles a lot easier after you do it because you kind of have all the information there. But for me, it's just, you know, talking to yourself is such a different animal and you have to have even more energy than you think you need for it to translate and for people to really enjoy it. So, and it's, you know, you sit there and it takes you an hour and you get, you know, 15 minutes of a podcast when it's like, what just happened? When, funny story though, like one of the biggest reasons that I love just talking with people, you know, Keaton and I were so, man, we're so good back and forth. Like we were on the same page. You know, it was just such a good, awesome experience that him and I did that. And true story, we never once edited a single episode. Not once. Like we hit the record button, we went, you know, to the end, stopped it, and then all he did was add the intro and outro to the pod, and we never had to edit. Yeah, a couple times obviously, like when we had technical difficulties, yeah, those things happen. So, you know, but there were a handful of times because we did it for so long that we'd be 3/4 away through the episode and Keaton's like, dude, I never hit record.
Oh God.
Like, oh my God, that's crazy. Oh, man. So, yeah. But honestly, everybody's different. For me, I prefer talking with somebody than to myself.
Me too. And I feel like I get turned around in circles if I'm just talking by myself versus having somebody to feed off of, like you said. And when, which one do you prefer? Do you prefer writing or do you prefer podcasting?
That's a good question. I mean, writing has been such a passion of mine for a long time. I've not always been good at it. Like when I first started, I'd probably be pretty embarrassed to read some of my early stuff. You know, I got much better as a writer as years went on. And that just only heightened my passion for it because I'm like, hey, I'm pretty good at this. And so, you know, when you start feeling proud of the content you're putting out, your passion increases. So writing is something that will never, like, it will be something I never like not do. Right. And podcasting, it's just different. I enjoy it a lot. You know, it's just talking, having conversations with people, talking about something that you love. And, you know, I love doing the homework for it when it calls. You know, if you're going to have debates with people on certain players and you want to bring up stats and do that whole thing. I can't say I love either one more. I think I love them both because it's all kind of part of the deal, right? I mean, it's hard to just podcast or just write. I think you got to kind of have your hand in both jars, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Some people like to just, you know, go to an article, scroll it, find out, you know, get their eyes on something. And some people like to listen to what you have to say about it. You can explain, you know, more and answer questions for if people are in. So you were talking about doing, you know, live streams. What is the importance? What do you think the important, I don't do live streams, but what would you think, you know, could be some benefits of doing a live stream?
Yeah, just so in general. I love doing live streams. I started doing that, was it last year or the year before, on my cell phone, just like, you know, Periscope or Twitter Live or whatever. And I just feel like it's such a different, unique way to interact with your followers. And you actually, you can gain followers by doing that because, and you know what, it's, you've got to feel confident in things, because you know, when you're opening up to a live stream, that everyone's going to see the questions that are being put out there, and you got to be ready for an answer, right? I mean, you just got to have an answer ready, you know, like it or not. And, you know, we talked about being vulnerable. I think that's one of the biggest things about it is, but really, you know, you sit down, I have a beer or two, whatever, maybe some bourbon. And, you know, I just sit here and I chat with people. And to me, like, that was one thing. The very first live I did, I was putting dishes away. I was like, you know, and it was, I felt right of, from my very first one, very comfortable with it. And I think it might have been because I was actually doing something, right? So I was like, hey, you know, don't mind me. I'm just putting dishes away. So go ahead and ask some questions. And luckily, you know, because of my following, I started getting plenty of questions where it wasn't awkward at all. Like I was able to just answer the questions. And then as soon as I did that, I decided to not do dishes while I did it and just actually sat down and did live streams. But I think it's anything and everything you could do, whether it's live stream, podcast, articles, video content, whatever. It's all important because it's reaching all different kinds of people. Because as you said, some people like to just sit and read when they have a chance, you know, maybe they're at work and they don't have headphones and they don't want to, you know, listen to something. You know, they'd rather read than, hey, writing an article is perfect. And, you know, if you're doing that, then you're reaching those people. If you're, you know, people who would rather watch a video because it's easier for them to consume, they don't want to sit and read something, you're reaching that person. If you go on a live stream and somebody that normally doesn't, you know, want to reach out to people on Twitter, if they have a question, they'll type up a question right there for you live. And then they start following you because they're like, hey, I like what this person had to say. So I think it's important to, you know, don't overextend yourself, but try to get your hand in everything, because again, you're just reaching out. It's the branches, right? You got to imagine just branching out to everybody And I think it's important. And it's important for yourself too, because you challenge yourself on things that you're not normally comfortable with. And it makes you better.
And when you give out advice and you answer people's questions, was there ever a point in time where you were like concerned that you'd be giving out advice and it wouldn't be right? And then, you know, it wouldn't hit. And then, you know, because when I first started out, I was like, I don't want people to be mad at me. But at the end of the day, you just have to get over it.
Yeah, right. So, of course, there's that, especially when you're first kind of starting and you're like trying to, you know, build credibility and stuff. And, you know, for me, like, I think I've had it for a long time, but I really think it happened when I wrote an article about with the fantasy footballers. It was how I thought that DeAndre Hopkins was going to be a wide receiver one. And, you know, I was getting buried for that. You know, so he doesn't have a quarterback, blah, blah, blah. And I wrote it out really well. And sure enough, he was the wide receiver one the next season. And then the year after that, I wrote about Devontae Adams. And sure enough, he became, I'm like, oh, man, this is great. So, yeah, I think it's one of those things where you need to not worry about getting things wrong. We're all kind of like, you know, we're just predicting the weather, right? It's, you know, you can look at stats and, you know, you're familiar with whatever this weather system looks like, and you've gotten better at timing it. But again, weather just kind of does whatever the heck it wants. Same thing with football. I mean, we can prep ourselves as much as possible. And the goal is to be right more than we're wrong. And, you know, you build the tough skin, I guess, over the years, you know, because when you first started doing it, you do take everything personally. Mm-hmm. And you just can't do that because, you know, more often than not, people are going to respect you and respect your opinion if you speak in confidence and say, hey, here was my process, even though I was wrong about so-and-so, this is why I thought that, and, you know, take it or leave it. And oftentimes, I think, I'd like to think that there are more good than bad people out there. So I think a lot of times people will kind of look at that and say, okay, I can see that logic and I still trust your word.
I meant to tell you this since you bring up that you wrote for the Fantasy Footballers at one time, and I write there now. Mm-hmm. That your stuff is like, whenever there's examples, I'll click on a link, and like half the time it's your stuff. I'm like, oh, okay. So I just thought I'd let you know that. Awesome. I get all yay.
Thank you. No, that's great. I wrote a lot of stuff for them, and you know, mm-hmm. we call it like the OG. There's a group of us that have a dynasty league together, and we were like the original writers over at the Fantasy Footballers. You know, Ben Cummings, Kyle Borg, I call him. Mm-hmm. He's the editor now. And you know, Keaton was on there as well, and Travis Strickland, Eric Ludwig, you know, Ryan Weiss. I can name them all. But yeah, we just had our rookie draft. And so, you know, one thing that the Fantasy Footballers are really good with, at least with, you know, with their writing staff and everything, is just building a family feel. Like, you feel like you're on such a tight knit team. Mm-hmm. And you want to share each other's work and promote everybody and say, hey, you know, check out what we're doing at the Fantasy Footballers. And, you know, that's something I really appreciated in my 3 years writing with them, was that, you know, I gained some friendships, including the guys, you know, and Brooks in the background. I've met them multiple times, and, you know, I'm friends with them. I'm friends with, you know, everyone I just listed. And it's, you know, I hope that you're getting the same experience, and it sounds like you are. So that's awesome.
Sure. Yeah, it's great over there. So you really do want to be a part of something that feels like that. It feels like a family camaraderie. Mm-hmm. That's what I would suggest to people too that are looking to write at places. Look at the type of people that, you know, are there. If it's quality people, if it's quality articles, you know, that you want to put out good work. So you want to make sure that the people you're writing for also put out good work. So yeah. And now tell us more about what you're doing now with the writing portion. You were talking about it earlier when you first introduced everything, but Yeah. What are you doing right now with the writing?
Yep. So I'm writing various articles over at the Game Day. I wrote about how the 17th game this year is going to impact fantasy football. And I gave out, you know, a few different suggestions of how, you know, leagues can handle that, you know. And obviously I encourage anybody, if they have any other ideas, to throw them out there, because this is something that we should all be trying to discuss together and come with the best possible way to go about it. And I know there's more than one answer, but you know, that's the good thing about this, is we learn from each other. So, you know, I put a few suggestions out there. Obviously I'm writing other articles. I'm doing a ton of player profiles right now that I'm working on. I'm going to be doing some mock drafts with the team as well, so we can put together a few articles as what it pertains to that, and do some rankings. And as I said, I'm writing all of my stuff for the Fantasy Football Black Book with Joe Pisapia, and so a laundry list of just amazing analysts. And Joe and I are actually going to be getting together tomorrow via Zoom to kind of do our mock drafts, which is what one big section that I write about, which is like standard, super flex, all the different types of leagues you could be in. We do a mock draft, 4-round mock draft for each of those. And we kind of talk through why we think this player is going to go here or there or whatever. And I write that up, and I'm doing the NFC North impact on, you know, what their outlook looks like heading in there. And then I think maybe some overrated and underrated players as well. So yeah, there's a lot of writing I'm doing right now behind the scenes. So, you know, if I've been quieter on Twitter, which I don't think I have, I have, but like, it's only like a quiet day for me is probably like 20 tweets.
Yeah. So, I feel you on that. Yeah. So can you elaborate more on the Black Book and what exactly it's all about? So for the people that have never heard of it before or don't know what it's all about.
Sure. Yeah. So Joe Pisapia started, he does the Black Book for football and baseball as well. I'm not part of the baseball one at all. So I started doing the fantasy football one in 2018. So 18, 19, 20, and this will be the fourth one. And so he gathers just, I would say, roughly 10 or so. The number changes every year. Analysts in the industry, where they write up, you know, different things. So like Scott Bogman does a lot of IDP and defensive player stuff. He's got, you know, it's basically a draft guide that gets you prepared for the upcoming season. And, you know, it's available on Amazon on, you know, paperback, or you can get a digital copy of it. So if there are any updates or anything that we decide to go in and change, you'll get those updates as well. So, that's, to me, I love having the paper and just feeling that and being like, yeah, this is cool. But, you know, I think it's important for you to have that for as a quick reference, and you can use a highlighter in it and stuff, because it's kind of like newspaper, black and white paper for you to easily make notes and stuff. And but I definitely suggest getting the electronic one as well, so you can get updates.
And how did you feel when you were selected to help, you know, collaborate with that project?
That was one of the proudest moments for me, because mm-hmm. I love Joe so much, and him and I, we've become very good friends, and to know that, you know, I was in a group chat with a whole bunch of like really talented people, and you know, at the time when he first asked me, there wasn't that many people that were in it, that were featured in it. And so he like DM'd me, he's like, hey Nate, what do you think about, you know, doing the fantasy football Black Book this year, writing in the book, and it's a published thing. I'm like, are you kidding me? Absolutely. So that was something that, you know, I take a lot of pride into things that I do, and just being asked to do that, I mean, that just spoke to my hard work and everything that I'm doing. It kind of validated for me that, hey, somebody's recognizing this and enough to put my words in a book with his name on the on the cover, you know, he trusts me that much where he asked me to be a part of it. So one of those things, once I did, you know, thankfully he asks me every year, and it's been awesome ever since.
And do your friends know to the extent how your fantasy football life is and all the fun accolades and everything, all that? Do they know what goes on with you behind, you know, when you're doing fantasy football stuff?
Yeah. So I think at first, it, similar to how my wife reacted, was like, oh, you know, that's cool, you know. And to me, I'm so immersed in the fantasy football industry and the realm and talking with other analysts every day that I can't possibly imagine anybody not being, you know, fully invested in this. Even, you know, a lot of my friends who play in fantasy football leagues, they're not all about it, you know, the way I am. But yeah, I mean, at this point they know very well, you know, where they can find me and all my opinions and use those things against me all the time. So yeah, I think it did take a while for them to be like, you know, I think at first they were just like, oh, that's, you know, that's cool. You know, you're writing for this site. Oh, that book was published. That's really cool. But you know, at this point now they're just like, yeah, when are you going to be working there full time? Like, what's going on? I get asked that question like every day. So
yeah, if people only knew, like, it's not something that you could just snap your fingers and it magically happens. So you said that they, you know, they kind of know your guys and all that stuff and use it against you. Do you ever have people that are asking you like, yo, give me give me some scoop, give me some inside info, give me some, even if you don't have inside info, but you know, they think you do.
Yeah, all the time. And you know, there's disadvantages to this because a lot of times what will happen is that, you know, in my leagues or like my friend leagues and stuff like that, nobody will trade with me because even when I one thing I pride myself on in leagues, and you can ask, you know, other analysts or whoever that I've been in leagues with or am in leagues with, is that I offer very fair trades. I offer trades that's going to help that team and help my team. You know, it's like, it's a give and take. Right. And that's why a lot of times it's a package deal. Like, I'm going to give you a wide receiver and a running back. I'm giving you the better wide receiver, but I would like the better running back in return. You know what I mean? So it's like, we're not losing out on the position, but we're both gaining value in the position. We need the value, whatever. That's one small thing. However, like with my friends, I'm like, hey, you know, let's do this deal. And they're just automatically assuming I know something they don't. Right. I'm like, oh yeah. So Dalvin Cook is going to like hold out this year, or he's, you know that he's, you know, he's going to like quit after week four, like, you know, something. So there's no way I'm trading him, which, you know, it's just, or trading for him or whatever. So it does work against you. But yeah, they do often, you know, will talk to me and ask me various questions about certain players and who I think, you know, what I think about, you know, Josh Reynolds this year in Tennessee and just random freaking things. And you know what? It makes me excited and proud that they're asking such like deep questions like that. So it's good.
That is, I mean, yeah, my friends are the same way and people I work with and, you know, just everything. So speaking of work too, so you said that obviously, you know, people kind of get this idea that you're doing it full time because you put in, you know, the work and stuff. How is balancing, you know, having a full-time job and trying to make it full-time in this industry and working hard to get there? Like, how do you manage that?
I'm getting old. I will say it's not getting easier, that's for sure. especially, you know, the last, you know, 6 years, I have a son. He's, you know, he's now six. So, you know, he's wants to spend all the time in the world with me, and I want to spend all the time in the world with him. So that just, all that means is like, if I really want to keep pushing at this, is just late nights for me, because I try to spend the time I can after my work day before he goes to bed with my son And, you know, this week is just one of those weeks where my wife and I usually will watch a movie or one of our shows and relax at the end of the night once Leo goes to bed, because, you know, 6-year-old boys, man, they're freaking exhausting. And, you know, I love them to death, but they take a lot out of you. And so at that point, we both just crash and we're just like relaxed together. But this week is just one of those weeks where I'm like, sorry, honey, you know, you gotta watch something by yourself, because I'm going to be working late tonight. And, you know, it's all worth it in the end. And I think I do a great job balancing it. And if I'm going to give advice at all, it's to make sure you are balancing your life, because before you know it, you're going to look back and think, man, am I spending time on the things that matter? Or like, am I dividing my time up in a way that makes me feel good? I think you got to look out for yourself. And I think I do a pretty good job doing that, but it gets challenging. That's for sure. It's not an easy thing.
And talking about balancing your life as a piece of advice, you know, was there something that you wish people would have told you before you started in the industry that, you know, would have been helpful to know right away instead of having to like learn it through trial and error?
Man, that's a good question. I'm trying to think here. So I guess it would be all right. So I'll say this. It's something that changed and it evolved in my analysis and the way I present my stats and the way I speak in my articles, that I didn't at first. And I wish that someone had said this to me, because it's advice that I give to people, frequently now, which is speak with confidence. Like, it's okay if you end up being wrong, but don't say this could happen or this should happen, this should work out, because right there you're giving yourself an out. When if you truly believe like, hey, this guy's going to finish top 10, I don't care. I know not everyone's saying this right now. But you need to be confident and say, look, here's why. For me, like, Miles Sanders is a top 10 running back this year. Here is why. Not he should be a top 10. Like, it's a possibility that he is. Because honestly, what that does is like, not that you want a victory lap, but you can't really victory lap if it does pan out, because you kind of like spoke as if it's a possibility. So for me, I know it's a long winded answer just to say, be confident. Right. And that's right. Something that I wish I did from the very beginning. And I spoke with absolutes versus saying could, possibly, should. I try to eliminate that vocabulary.
Yeah, that's good advice, and something that I still have issues with. Grammarly's probably like, stop doing it, like screaming at me. But yeah, like, yeah, it's my tough, confidence though. Is, I know it's hard, especially if it was like the way that I talk, because that's the, you know, you have to kind of learn how to like make it more, you know, easy to understand if it's in writing form versus me sitting here and you know how my personality is and you know, right. How indecisive I am. Anyway, so let me ask you a few questions that don't have anything to do with like being in the fantasy football industry, really. I mean, some of it's, I mean, basically, but like, if you were to do a podcast about anything besides fantasy football, what do you think that you'd be good at doing a podcast on?
There's actually two different answers here. Right? Okay. Again, I'm going to bring up my boy Keaton Denley, where we actually had a spinoff podcast. And, you know, we had Fantasy Tilt, and then we had a podcast where we just talked about like everyday life things. Mm-hmm. And we came up with random topics. And, you know, so for me, it is a fun, you know, it's a breath of fresh air when you don't always have to talk fantasy football, because again, we do it so much and it's something that we spend so much time on, that if you get a chance to just, you know, talk about anything else, you know, that's what we did. And we called it Off the Rails. So it was Fantasy Tilt, Off the Rails. You know, we still went on tilt about whatever we were on tilt that day. And that is actually something we brought to a fantasy football podcast, even when we did regular fantasy tilt, when we tilted about things, it wasn't always fantasy football based. And, you know, for example, I would tilt about, you know, gas stations. And when you're at the pump and you just want to quickly, you know, pay and put the pump in and pump your gas, and it asks you like 36 questions. Do you want to get a car wash today? Do you want to sign up for rewards? Like, there's so many things. Like, no, I just want to freaking get gas and get out of here. So it's like, those were the types of things that like we started the show off with, and it kind of broke the ice, and then we got into business. So to answer your question though, any topic in the world would be great. But for me, I love the MCU. I'm huge into, you know, Marvel comics, you know, all that stuff. My wife and I are on our fourth rotation of watching the MCU in the order that it's meant to be watched in. So, yeah. So I guess if I were to do a podcast that had a specific topic, I think that would be it.
And that's something I don't know anything about, because I haven't watched any of those movies. Oh, so what's the first movie that we should watch?
So it would be Captain America.
The
original, the first Avenger. So that's
okay.
Captain America would be the first one. And if you want, I can send you a link that gives all the, you know, the order in which you should watch everything. Mm-hmm. And it all connects. And it's amazing what they've done over the years, because it's the, you know, when they actually film things, it's all shuffled.
But oh yeah.
Somehow they planned it out to really just string along and connect, and it's pretty impressive.
Oh, that is really cool. And I'm probably like the only person that hasn't seen any of those movies, but you know, I guess I should get on that. So when you're hanging out with your family, what do you guys like to do? I know you said you don't have any free time, but let's say you do. What do you guys do, you know, in your free time, or even during the COVID times when you couldn't really go anywhere or do anything? Cause we're still in that, you know.
I'm pretty lucky, because even in this hard year, I was actually unemployed for most of it. And it's funny to say I was lucky. because I can actually look back into it and say what it did was give me extra time with my wife and son at a time where I think a lot of people needed that type of thing. Mm-hmm. Where sometimes the distraction of work can actually work against you. And so I think the three of us had a ton of bonding time in this past year, and we have a seasonal campsite up north over where I live, and we go there every weekend. And so that's what we did. We spent a lot of, not just weekends, but like weeks in midweek up there, because I wasn't working and we could have that time together. And it was one of those things where, you know, eventually, you know, I really needed to get the job, because if I didn't get a job, then everything falls apart. But my wife and I, especially my wife, I got to credit her, because she does all the finances for our life and everything. And we were never in a position where we really were hurting, you know, especially being out of work as long as I was. But thankfully we had all that time. So we spent a lot of time up at camp. And when we go up to camp, I love doing, you know, campfires every night, and you know, the whole s'mores. And my son has a monster truck up there that he rides around, you know, play all bunch of sports and stuff. My son loved playing. He plays every sport there is, and he's just good at everything. I don't know how. But so yeah, we just spend a lot of time together, and, you know, very rarely will we actually get sick of each other. And that's a pretty special thing.
Yeah, it really is. Especially, you know, being trapped indoors together for as long, it sometimes you feel like, but when you have a good family like that around you, it's awesome. Do you guys watch football together too? Or is that kind of a just you thing, or
yeah, how does it go? My wife will watch it when it's on, but, my son Leo's really into it.
Like, yeah.
So he's, you know, automatically he's a Cowboys fan, just cause I've, you know, influenced him in that way.
Smart and, boy.
Yeah, absolutely. I know you're a Cowboys fan as well. So it's one thing we share. And it's so cool, because not that it was cool that he got upset, but last year we were up at camp, and then Dak Prescott broke his ankle, and Leo was watching it, and Leo started tearing up. He was like crying because he saw how upset Dak was. Oh. And then, so the next day, everything we did, like we went for a bike ride, Leo would be like, I'm doing this for Dak Prescott. You know, it's like everything he was doing, I'm going to climb this rock for Dak Prescott. And I'm like, that's, my son's a real Cowboys fan. And that right there proved it. But now he's kind of teasing me because he wanted a Eagles jersey for Christmas. And I think it's really, he thinks all the logos are cool, right? Yeah. So it's like now we're talking about a six-year-old. So he does love the Cowboys, but he just likes all the teams. He thinks the Buccaneers are cool because of, you know, they're pirate themed. Yeah. Right? So I told him, you know, the first game of this year is going to be Cowboys and Buccaneers. He's like, no way. So yeah, it was awesome.
That is awesome. That is awesome. And I feel him on like logos and stuff, like a star versus a bird. Okay, cool, whatever. Yeah. But no.
Well, the truth is, if you know, I know not every, this is an audio podcast, and but I did list all the different, you know, memorabilia I have, because being in fantasy football, I'm a fan of individual players.
Right.
So I have a lot of different team stuff behind me. Mm-hmm. So I can't really fault him if he wants to do the same thing. Right. So he's learning from me, even though I'm like, no, we don't like the Eagles.
Yeah. You're just going to move NFC East anywhere else. Just, you know, for the most part, like,
that's what I try to explain to him, but you know, hey, whatever. Yeah. He wants something from every team like I have, and that's fine.
That's cool. I mean, that's cool. does he help you out with your fantasy teams, or does he want to get involved with, you know, fantasy football?
He's too young, I think, to really get into it. And, you know, I would be managing two teams, I think, at that point. But the truth is, we did start something last year that we didn't, or no, a couple years ago. And it was Leo Dutta Picks. So like hashtag Leo Dutta Picks, where it was short videos, and it would be like the Thursday night game or the Sunday night game. It'd be one game per week where we would highlight. And I would just say, hey, Leo, you know, it's the Dolphins versus the Broncos tonight. Who's going to win? And he'd be like, you know, Dolphins. I'm like, why is it the Dolphins? And he would give just some completely random answer that has nothing to do with football. And I'd be like, well, all right, I think the Broncos are going to win. And then I'd just end the video with like either my 5-year-old or 4-year-old son at the time is going to be right about this game, or you can listen to me. It's up to you. And then that would be it. So I think Leo, now that he's 6, he really wants to like start doing those videos. He's really into watching YouTube, and he wants to do his own videos and stuff. So we're going to bring that back this year. So it'll be fun. I think at least it's fun for me. Those are the types of things I do for myself, but I just like sharing it with, you know, with Twitter, because I just feel like I interact with so many people on there that it's kind of like just like, that's my Facebook, I guess. Like I'm sharing with my family, right?
And is it crazy to think that you have so many friends that you don't really actually like hang out with? You've never like, or maybe you've never even met them, you know? Is it weird to wrap your head around that?
It's so insane, because it took Keaton and I 3-4 years before we met each other in person, and that was in Dallas. And that was the first time him and I, you know, were in the same room together. And but you know, thankfully, because of technology and the way you and I are communicating right now, I know it's a podcast and everybody's listening, but you and I right now, we're looking at each other.
Right.
Like we're having a conversation. Yes. It feels like we're in the same room, you know, we're looking at each other's face, and so you feel like you're not losing out on a certain level of friendship because you're not physically in the same room. It's, you know, so that's why I feel like I can confidently say I'm friends with a lot of people in this industry, because we spend a lot of time like this. And even if it is just texting, I mean, you know, in real life, that's the main form of communication anyway. You know, with your friends and family, you're texting their phone number. So to me, what's the difference of doing that or tweeting back and forth or DMing with somebody? So yeah, I mean, I think that it is weird. Like it's weird when you first meet somebody in person, but at the same time, you kind of like, you feel like you know them like you have met them in person before, because technically I think kind of that's what we're doing here. So
yeah, I agree. I feel so much more comfortable meeting somebody in person that I've actually talked to, like on a podcast face to face, you know, it's like, I know you, you know? Right. So, so have you, been able to meet a lot of people in the industry and in person, face to face?
I have. Yeah. I mean, I've been to my fair share of, conventions and all that good stuff. And I think, this year actually, you know, we're going to, I say we, like some people, you know, in the Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New England area, I think we're going to have a cookout at Bob Gilchrist. I don't know if you know Bob Gilchrist is. So we're going to have a cookout at his house when the Scott Fishbowl starts.
Oh, okay. So
we're all going to just like sit around, make our picks or whatever. And you know, we're not in the same league. I don't know if we're going to be. But, you know, it's one of those things where I think the plan was for this to be a live draft in certain areas. Mm-hmm. But obviously kind of COVID screwed that whole thing up.
Yeah.
We've decided we're going to get together anyway and just, you know, have a cookout and hang out. So yeah, I have met a lot of people, but there are plenty of people I have not, you know, spent time with or enough time with in person.
I'm going to need to bring up that whole idea of doing something with the Scott Fishbowl with the people in the Dallas area. I know. Yeah, I know like Katie Flower and Derek Brown. We were, you know, we've been. And
they've been
Ray. Tight, was, so. Ray's out there.
Yeah.
So yeah. 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 So
there's a lot of people in the Dallas area.
Yeah, for sure. And so that's a great idea. And it's really cool that you guys are doing that. And speaking of Scott Fishbowl, because Scott Fish will be on here at some point. There you go. He's repping right now. He's got a Scott Fish Bowl 9 shirt on. if you were in charge of coming up with the theme, if you were, I know we already know what's going on this year, but if you could have your own magical theme, what would you choose as, you know, for the divisions and everything? What would your theme be?
Yeah, I think Scott's done an amazing job with covering a lot of things I think I thought would be cool. You know, he's done like childhood toys and that, like that was last year. And that to me was really cool. What did he do? He did video games and Disney characters. And, you know, so he's basically covered all the things I said. I think if we kept it strictly, like comic books or like, you know, you got to pick a Marvel character or a DC character. I think that would be pretty cool. I know this year is going to be music and it's a funny thing. I've got such a diverse taste in music and you know, I know you're into rap and that's what got me really into music was Biggie Smalls, Puff Daddy, Mace at the time. Those guys, that's what got me into music. But then I've enjoyed other music. Like I'm not, you know, it's one of those things my wife says that she admires about me. She doesn't care that I don't care what people think, but like NSYNC, I love pop too. Like
NSYNC.
So yeah. So NSYNC for me is just, I was in a group with my cousin where we actually did the dances and all that good stuff. So I flat out requested Scott to put me, if they have an NSYNC category or NSYNC league, to put me in that.
Oh yeah.
Because I think it would be hilarious. And it's just a kind of a callback to my childhood.
Yeah, I was a huge NSYNC fan. Dad took me to see him. I thought Lance was going to be my husband. And well, we don't know what happened there. No idea.
How funny is that though, on both sides?
Yeah, I know. Like, okay. So what are some musical artists that you're into right now?
So like One Republic. I'm a huge Ed Sheeran fan. I love Ed Sheeran. NF. Honestly, he's surpassed Eminem as like my favorite rapper. And that's the dad of me talking though, because I can listen to NF in front of my 6-year-old son because NF doesn't swear.
Yeah.
And The truth is, like, I love to swear. Like, I don't ever swear on podcasts or anything like that, but I do like to swear.
Yeah.
But when I listen to NF, it to me, it's almost more powerful that he's able to put such an amazing flow in just the value and the content in his message mm-hmm. without swearing. And it's like, there are certain times where I'm like, oh, this would be a great spot for him to use this, swear word. But at the same time, it's just like, it really is not necessary. It's like, I love it, but it's not a necessary thing to add. You don't need to have that even in, the rap or the hip hop industry. Right. You don't need to have that to be successful. And I think that's one thing he's proven over and over again. So yeah, all the different types of music. I'm missing a whole bunch, obviously, but that's mainly what I listen to now.
Did you go to any live shows? Are you too old for that now? Did you go to a lot of live shows prior to COVID? Or
oh yeah, no, I mean I did, and I think it's funny you say like too old for that, because I do, over the years I've kind of like, my wife still loves going to live concerts, and not mm-hmm. that I don't love it. It's just that, like, I guess I don't love it. Like,
yeah, right.
I'm listening to it. Like, I can barely hear the lyrics because everyone around you is screaming. And I'm just like, I've turned into like such an old guy, get off my lawn kind of person. And, I do like to have fun, but, I don't enjoy concerts as much as I did when I was younger, but I've been to plenty of concerts. I can list them off, Scripts, NSYNC, obviously. One thing I do regret is I never went to an Eminem concert. So that's one thing I'm missing out on.
With live music, I'm kind of the same way, where I'm like, you want to do your concert on a Tuesday night? Like, I can't do that, And then like, B, I have to go out to Dallas, and that's 30 minutes away from here. Yeah. So I can't drink while I'm out there. So then, Yeah,
I'd rather investing a lot of time when you have stuff to do early in the morning.
Yeah.
I mean, eventually you just get too old for certain things, I guess.
I sound like I'm like, I think we're sitting here talking about that. I'm kind of like talking myself into like not going to live music anymore. But I know as soon as like something comes around here, like I'm like jonesing for it. So, hopefully, everything will get back to
quote-unquote normal, right? What's driving us, right, is I think we'll have a new appreciation for the things that we weren't able to do during this mm-hmm. time. And so maybe I might even change my mind the way I feel about going to live shows and stuff. I mean, I always have a good time, but again, it's not the same as when I was younger. But maybe we both of us find some new love, renewed love for going to a live show.
Especially if they have you in like little boxes where you sit with the one person you're there and you don't leave that little box, and they bring you your drinks. I'm fine with that. But
that's okay. That's
it's like all the shows like are like young kids and stuff,
Yeah, no, that's more like a box seat for everybody. That'd be awesome.
We'll do that. So before I let you go, you were talking about your family a lot, and not as much as I probably should have asked you. So I want to ask you, like, being a father, because I don't have kids, so I don't know, like, being a father, I know is probably your favorite role, right? Being a 100%. Dad and being a husband. Yeah. Since your child's still relatively young, mm-hmm. like, what are you looking forward to in the future? What are the big milestones that you're kind of looking forward to? I know you don't want him to grow up, but
no, yeah, that's one thing. I've always been like a type of parent. My wife is the same way. We cherish every little thing he is our only child, and it wasn't easy for us to get him, actually. So when it finally worked out, I think it gave us this just appreciation for every minute. And honestly, being a parent is the most bittersweet thing in the world, because you love seeing them grow, and you love seeing them get smarter and interact more and learn life, and all those things are awesome. But every time something like that happens, that's one step away from what they were. And they'll they'll never be that again. It sounds so depressing, right? But it's the truth. It's just, I remember thinking how amazing it was that Leo was laying on his back reaching for a toy. And I'm like, wow, look at, he's reaching for a toy. Now he's just having full-blown conversations with me. He's actually, he's so good at articulating his feelings. And that's something that I admire about him, that he does such a good job with it, where even when I'm upset with him and he say he did something wrong, that I think he'll say exactly why he did it and why he's feels a certain way. And I actually understand him. I'm like, wow, you verbalize that so well that I understand your side of it. And it's really cool. But I guess if we're going to fast forward a little bit, I guess I can't wait for him to, you know, start being in some leagues with me, and, you know, where he's old enough where he can just start living life and exploring and going out and making friends. And it's not me and my wife, you know, having to be hovering over him and making sure he's safe with everything. I think that part kind of excites me to see, him, without me hovering over him all the time, I guess.
Well, let him know that we look forward to his videos this season. So yeah, we are. Can you go ahead and just, for everybody that's been listening, give them, you know, your info, where to find you, what you're up to.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, you can find me on Twitter at DominateFF. That is where I live. I'm on Twitter more than I'm present anywhere else. It's the facts. It's what I do. So you can find me there. You can find me, at the Game Day NFL. You can follow them on Twitter or thegameday.com. And again, look out for the Fantasy Football Black Book that's coming out, in June. And, you can get that all the way up till, you know, the first game of the season. It's something's going to prepare you the best you've ever been prepared for any season, where you are reading from the best minds in the business. And we all come together in a collective sense, to provide you with everything that we find ourselves to be very good at. So, yeah, look out for the Black Book, and that's all the places you can find me.
Well, that's awesome, guys. Y'all need to go check out Dominate FF. Go check him out. Nate Hamilton's got all the awesome stuff over at his Twitter account. Go check him out. Awesome, awesome. I appreciate you coming on and talking with me.
Thanks, Casey. I love that you have me, and sure. I really admire what you're doing here, because it's more of just a casual conversation with a friend, versus, you know, trying to rack my brain with all these stats on Miles Sanders and you know, whoever else. We, you know, it's a good refreshing thing to do. And honestly, talking about how far I've come is kind of giving me just an extra push and a little bit more motivation that I needed at the moment. So I appreciate you, and thank you for having me on.